This is Ali Ciardo, and this is Photo Field Notes, stories and inspiration from professional photographers. My interview today is with Jamie Larson from Jamie Larson Photography and the Snap Society. And I love Jamie because she's really focused on community, both from the perspective of, you know, photographers helping photographers and not shutting each other out and community over competition, and also just her own involvement in her community and growing her own business through community involvement. If you are listening to this in iTunes, I definitely encourage you to go to photofieldnotes.com to see show notes, photos from Jamie and all the other photographers from the other interviews, and then a bunch of other photographer resources. So photofieldnotes.com, and let's get on to the show. This is Ali Ciardo, and I'm talking with Jamie Larson, who's the founder of Jamie Larson Photography and the Snap Society. Okay, Jamie, I know you have a really interesting story, so why don't you tell us, how did you become interested in it, and then how did you make it into a career?
Okay, well, actually, you know, I did not go to college for photography. I went to college for communication and psychology, and my husband and I worked together, and then we had babies, and so I stayed at home with my babies, and you know, it just, as I started having children, I always loved taking pictures. I mean, I was like the annoying friend who would stop everything so that we could have a picture, you know? But when I had kids, it's like I wanted to really capture their everyday life. And every time I take pictures, it just never looked the way I thought that it should look. So I just started researching and figuring out how to get great images. And then I learned I had to edit. So I started researching that. And at the same time, you know, my husband was a pastor and we really needed some extra income. But I didn't want to work outside of the home at that time because I wanted to raise the kids. And, you know, the funny thing is like, if you are going to work outside of the home, you really need it to be a career because otherwise you don't have money for childcare. You know, we didn't have family around. So I wanted to stay home with the kids, and it just seemed like a fit for me to start my own business. But little did I know there was so much that I had to learn on the business end of things, which I think a lot of people don't realize. And so, you know, I've never been shy about seeking mentors. And so I started asking other photographers who had been in the business some questions, and I kind of got shunned in the beginning. And that's sort of what ignited my passion. Inside of me, I was like, when I know this stuff, I'm going to share it with people who ask me, you know? And so that is really that experience of being just kind of rejected by other photographers, or other photographers not being open and being more competitive than they were. I mean, I was just like a stay-at-home mom taking pictures of my kids, asking questions. You know, I really wasn't competition for them at the time.
Tell me a little bit more about that. How did you approach, like, who, first of all, you don't have to say who, obviously, but how were you finding these people and approaching them? And then what were they saying to you that was just kind of like,
well, you know, it's funny because now I feel like our community of the photography, I don't know if it's just changed in 7 years or if I just hit up the wrong people at first, but I feel like our community is really wonderful now. So I hate even bringing this up, but it's my story, so I'll talk about it. So I was in San Antonio. That's where I live. And I went to, it on my blog, I say, I went to my friend's wedding. It was actually my sister. I just didn't want to put that on the blog, but I went to my sister's wedding in Washington State. And like I said, I did not have a business. I had a camera. I was just learning at the time. And so I asked her wedding photographer, who is kind of a well-known wedding photographer. Now I know this. At the time, I didn't. But I just asked him, I said, how do you get this shot? And I can't remember the specific question or the specific shot I was asking about, but I asked him how to do it. And he looked at me and he said, I know how to get it because I'm a professional. And he just walked away. And I was going, oh my gosh. And the funny thing is he had to still take pictures of me the rest of the time, you know, even though he was mean to me because I was in the wedding party. So that was kind of my first experience. I kind of was like, oh my goodness. So, and then from there on, you know, I had approached somebody else in San Antonio, and she wasn't quite that mean, but when I would ask questions, she wouldn't give me answers. And so it was just really interesting, just very closed off. And hers, I was asking other questions, you know, shooting questions or editing questions, not a ton, just out of curiosity. So I learned from there that I needed, at that point, I needed to really research and read and look into it. But down the road, as my journey continued, I did run into photographers who were very willing to share. It was just in the beginning part of my journey, which I think was actually a good thing now to come to think of it, because there were times in my journey where I could have done the exact same thing to somebody else. And so it really put, you know, it instilled in me wanting to have a giving spirit with my knowledge after I learned it.
Yeah. And here's a question before we kind of go into the rest of your story. Do you think that there was any, so do you think some of the openness now comes from the fact that we can connect online and you can connect with photographers who don't feel competitive toward you because they're in different places versus going to somebody local?
Yeah. You know, I think that that's really true. In this case, though, my first experience, I don't know if a man knew I was from Texas, but I was not local to him. So I was of no, I think that his, I do think that there just are some, you know, he's an old school photographer for one. And I think, you know, he just did not have the spirit of sharing. That's really what I think that it was, honestly. And I think you're right. You know, with being on the internet and being in all these communities, if somebody doesn't want to share, obviously they're not going to be in the community, right? And so I think that that's another thing, trying to find people in communities that want to share. So, for instance, I went to a meetup group in San Antonio one time, and the guy who ran the meetup group, such a great guy. I mean, nicest guy ever. He's the one who took me on my first wedding, you know, and I was a second shooter for him. So, I mean, that was like a total 180 experience from the first guy to the second guy, but he also created a community for photographers in San Antonio. So obviously he was open and willing. So I think it's really important to, you know, find the right people, and the right people are going to be in those communities.
Yeah, that's a great point. So that was kind of the turning point a little bit for you. You actually found the right mentor and the right group of people to help guide you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So what happened from there? How did you take it then? So you shot a wedding with this guy. How did you then take it? And I know you don't even, as far as I can tell, market weddings at all now.
Right, I don't. Yep, I did my last wedding, I believe, last year, and it was only because I promised to do it for a senior that I did years ago. And so I did weddings. I really actually love doing weddings. The stress and the pressure that I feel like other photographers share about, I don't feel that stress and pressure during the wedding. I love being with the bride and kind of diffusing all the situations. However, after the wedding, I feel the stress and the pressure of all the pictures to cull through and to edit. And so that was the overwhelming part for me. And weddings are in the summer and my children are home for the summer. So I felt like I needed to make a decision. So my choice was to stick with family photography. So that's what I market, family and seniors. And I really do not do weddings at all. But what was your original question?
How about just getting from point A to point B? So you went from shooting, I'm just kind of using this as an example. You went from second shooting with this guy who you met to having your own business. So how did you make that? Yeah, how did you make that leap into actually starting your own business?
Yeah. So I think one thing is, when you're first starting out, you really do have to do everything to know what you love. And even though I was loving weddings, I had to come to realize weddings just didn't fit my lifestyle at the time. And so I shot sort of everything. I shot seniors. Just like everybody does, right? You know, seniors, newborns, I do everything. And at first we think everything is so marketable and everybody wants somebody who does everything. But in reality, specializing is key. And when you specialize, you can really market to the right people and you can give them what they need. So that's where I just sort of evolved and had to make the hard choices, because it is really hard to say no. It's really hard to say no. You know, like when I had to start saying no to weddings, oh my gosh, it just like was gut wrenching because it was money. I could just see the dollar sign going away. Right. But also saying no, I had to learn. It took me probably 3 seasons to learn that photography is really cyclical and it gets very, very busy. And that I need to decide what is my amount that I can do per month of shooting for my family. And that changes every year based on where my family is at. But that's hard to say no. So for me, I had to explore. I went second shooting. I did all these things. Then I did free at first, right? Because really the reason why I did free was because I didn't know that I could portfolio build and charge. And also, I needed that experience. You know, I just needed that experience. So I did it for my friends, and I kind of networked out that way. What I tell people now is, if you already have that experience, and if you already know what you're doing and shooting, that you should not portfolio build for free. You should portfolio build maybe for less and let people know that your prices will be, you know, raised soon, but don't do it for free. So I made that mistake and I did it for free. And then I had to really transition and revamp all my pricing. And so then you go through a whole nother stage in your business, right, where you are losing clients because you're at a totally different price point. But my work was at a place where I could not charge dirt cheap and I couldn't do shoot and burn anymore. It wasn't worth my time anymore to do a shoot and burn. So we went through that whole, you know, growing pains and transition of my business. And that was probably the best thing that I ever did, was quit the shoot and burn and really come up with a pricing structure, because then I came home with money. You know, I didn't come home with a couple $100. It was, you know, over $1,000 or $2,000 per shoot. And it was just so much more worth my time and my time away from my family to be coming home with that amount of money. So that's kind of how my business evolved. And this is in the time span of 7 years. And all those decisions that I made, you know, deciding to specialize and then deciding not to do shoot and burn, man, those decisions, they were so hard at the time, but I'm so glad that I did those things.
Yeah, and this is also relevant. So in past interviews, the specialization topic has been really hot with, you know, going back and forth between, you know, should people specialize, shouldn't they specialize? So this is probably mm-hmm. the at least fourth interview where that's been kind of a topic of note. And it's really, really fascinating to hear that. Now, the other thing is, you know, I think your story in a lot of ways follows the same path as so many people. And a lot of people kind of get stuck, I think, at that shoot and burn level. And mm-hmm. you make a big point in the way that you market to your clients to say that you're creating this rich experience for everyone. You're going to help them choose their outfit, pick their location. And then you say, and this is a sell, you know, selling them on the idea, you're going to hold their hand to help them choose their images. You're going to get this reveal night. So tell me a little bit about what that experience looks like for your clients and how you kind of went from just, oh, here are all your images to like, okay, let's do this. Let's actually sell them and help them pick out their images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when I started doing reveal nights, I was so nervous at first. I'm very outgoing. You know, I'm extroverted. So everybody thinks, really, everybody has tried to get me like to sell Mary Kay and all the oils and all that. So they think that I'd be a great salesperson. And honestly, I am horrible. I'm horrible at selling because I never want to pressure anybody into anything. I don't want to be salesy. And I'm very conscious of money. So even for my family, we have a budget. We live by a budget. And I feel like you should live by your budget. You know, I don't want to pressure you to live outside of your budget, right? So the whole idea of in-person sales really, I always tell people, it made me want to throw up in my mouth. Like, I just hated that idea, right? But I knew that my business needed to make more money. Like, I just knew, I was confident in my work and what I was providing that we needed to make more money. And I read everywhere that the way to do it was in-person sales. So I had to, let me tell you a little backstory really quick. When I was in eighth grade, I had an older brother. And he was going to come pick me up from school because my mom was out of town. He came to pick me up in this lowrider peach truck, okay? Lowrider peach truck. And so the kids were kind of making fun of me that this peach truck picked me up. And then that night I thought about it. And I was all shy about it and all embarrassed about it. And then that night I thought about it and said to myself, why am I embarrassed about this? I'm so proud of my brother. I'm so proud. I think his truck is so cool. Nobody else has a truck like this. I'm going to just talk it up. So the next day I go to school and I talk it up to my home class. I'm like, you guys won't believe it. You've never seen a truck like this. He's coming to pick me up and I'm going to get to ride in it. And so then when the truck rolls up, everybody thinks it's awesome. And so that story is kind of my mindset when I think of in-person sales or when I think of my reveal night. I call it a reveal night. I don't call it a sales night, but I know what I'm doing and I'm selling, but really I'm serving during that time. But just like the peach truck, I make sure to talk about it and talk it up throughout my whole client experience. And I tell people the very best part is the reveal night. And it's not just the best part for the client, though. It's the best part for me because I get to see the reaction and the responses of my clients. And since my clients are recurring, not anymore because now I just moved, but because they were recurring, I could see what pictures that they liked, which pictures or faces maybe they weren't crazy about, so I would know for next time. But it was so gratifying for me to, I felt like the experience went full circle once I did in-person sales, because I could see that. And then also, what I noticed too, before I ever started doing in-person sales, was some of my high clients. So even though I was shoot and burn, I did have a couple clients at this time that were very, very high end. And they would ask me, it's the funniest thing, these clients who were high end, nobody else asked me this, but the higher end clients, they would ask me to come to their house and help them, you know, decide where pictures were going to go or how big to make the pictures. And so that's a service that I did, right? Well, then I thought about it. It's like, everybody would want that, really. And so that's sort of the whole, the reveal night. We talk about, you know, what size picture, which picture. And, you know, I'm the professional. You're the professional. If you're the photographer, you're the professional. They want your opinion. If they can't choose from picture A and picture B, they want to know why you like picture B better. And that's probably what they're going to end up choosing. So it's really, for me, I just had to think about it as this major service that I was giving to people and talking it up in a way that they would get excited about it.
So when they come in, just give me like the really brief, how do you, first of all, where do they meet, or were you? I know you've moved, but
at their house.
Okay, so you would actually go to their house, which is awesome, yep. Because you don't have to have a space. You can just go to their house.
Right, and you can see their walls and their space and what they need.
Mm-hmm. So did you just bring a computer with you, or did you project it? How did you present the images?
Yeah, so I know people project it. They'll bring big projectors over to the house. I don't do that. I just bring my computer. I bring an HDMI cable. Every TV has an HDMI port nowadays. And I use Lightroom. So I edit in Lightroom. And then I have a slideshow in Lightroom that I've created with music. And so that's my presentation to them. Then after I present it to them, then we go picture by picture in Lightroom. So I don't actually print out proofs. We just use Lightroom. And in Lightroom, you can see like side-by-side images and that sort of thing. And then I bring a clipboard with a notepad, and they start writing down the images that they love. And if they decide, you know, we want the second package, so we only want 10 images, digital images, and then we want a canvas and this and that, you know, I help them narrow it down to get them where they want to go. But also, here's a key thing about that. I always make sure that they've seen my prices up front, because I never want it to be awkward at the reveal night. So typically when I come to their house, husband and wife have already talked about which package they're going to get, which collection that they're going to get. And a lot of times they end up getting a higher collection than they had planned, but at least they come prepared to purchase a collection, and they're not coming just totally shocked at the prices, you know?
Right. Yeah. I like that though, because I think that I know personally, I was really intimidated by in-person sales because, you know, I thought, oh, you've got to have the space and you have to have the projector or the thing, this whole setup. But what you use is actually very simple and very achievable for any photographer. You know, pretty much most mm-hmm. of us have Lightroom or something similar. Anyone yeah. can get an HDMI cable, no problem, and plug it into their TV. Yeah. And it's actually nice that you can go into their home and then say, yeah, well, what about right here? If this is where you're thinking, this is what would look yeah. good, and give that advice. So that's really awesome. And so from there, they choose their images, and then do you just mail them? Do they pick them up? What's the kind of like wrap up?
Yeah.
On the
so
top?
They purchase them that night. So they, you know, pay me the amount. If I normally carry a USB with me. So if they really, I like to give everything together, but if they're just itching to have the pictures, or maybe it's a senior and they need that digital file for something, I can give it to them right away. Otherwise I give everything to them. I package it really nice and I give it to them. I always say within 2 weeks. But typically it's sooner than that, and I deliver it to them.
Oh, so you hand deliver it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. So you really do complete the experience then.
Yeah. And it's not always easy, especially when I lived in San Antonio, you know, things are 45, 50 minutes away, but it was totally worth it. Especially when they're paying the prices that they're paying, they deserve that full service, you know?
Yeah. And I think, okay, so this is a really good time to talk about, you know, we kind of talked a little bit before, and you mentioned this kind of idea of like, it's so easy to make excuses that hold you back mm-hmm. along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think making that leap, you know, every stage along the way, it's specializing, it's raising your prices, it's moving to in-person sales, you know, starting the business in the first place. So it's so easy to make an excuse as to why you'll do it later, or you shouldn't do it. You're not in the right area. You're not qualified. So talk a little bit about that, how you got past those hurdles yourself as you each leap that you made in your own business.
Right. So as I've been doing business, I've been reading a lot of business books because, like I told you in the beginning, I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And in these business books, a lot of what I'm seeing is like, you just have to plow through. You can't make excuses. There is always a way. And so instead of taking your time to make these excuses, take the time to come up with solutions, right? So the first person I ever mentored, even before I created the Snap Society, in fact, she kind of pushed me to create the Snap Society, was a woman in a very small town in New Mexico. This is the first person I mentored. I had lived in that small town, so I knew exactly where she was coming from. I knew that there, in every town, there are very wealthy people. There is middle class, you know, people who have less. But there's always some people with money, right? And so as I'm mentoring her, you know, I'm helping her with her pricing. I'm helping her with her price structure. And we're just kind of going for it. I'm seeing, is this going to work in this small little town? And sure enough, like her prices, I think, are higher than my prices at this point. She is rocking it. Now, does she book everybody that inquires with her? No, of course not. She books less people that inquire with her, but she makes way more money now because of what her price point is at. So she could have had the excuse that, well, I live in a small town. There's no way I can do this. You know, but she didn't. She didn't make that excuse. She was willing to kind of roll with me on it and go for it. And she did it. And she's doing really, really great now. So with anything, like with in-person sales, with anything in your business, you have to decide, do I really want this? Is this really what I want? Because if it is really what you want, then you've got to start figuring out solutions to your problems. And just be done with all the excuses. And that's a huge thing that I've been learning in the last couple of years with success. Like, people are not successful because they got lucky or things just came to them. People are successful because they work their butts off and they don't let excuses get in the way, you know?
Yeah. And I love that story because I can see, I think, myself and a lot of other people in that same experience of kind of questioning yourself and saying, and I live in an area similar, you know, it's not a small town, but you question what the budgets will be and to be the higher price point or to take away the digitals from the package or, you know, any of those little things. Yeah. It's so scary when you do it. And then it's so gratifying when you realize it was worth it in the end. But, you know, it's hard because it's always hindsight. Oh yeah, that worked. But it can be very, very challenging going into it, not knowing necessarily.
It can be. And you know, that I think that's what you have to be, you have to be prepared for that. Like, you've got to be prepared that there's going to be failure along the way and that you're going to still get up and go, you know? Because I think that's the thing. People just think, if I do it the right way, it's going to work out perfectly. And then when it doesn't, it's so shocking to them, and then they don't continue on, you know? But that's not how it is in reality. And so, yeah, you really do have to play by ear and see what happens and then continue to go for it. The other thing that I also learned too is it's not necessarily people with money. It's people who value your art, you know? So some of my people who make the biggest orders, they don't have the biggest salaries. It's that they so value what I do that they are willing to save up and pay for it, right? Mm-hmm. And then some people who have the most money, I'm so surprised, you know? So really we have to remember too, it's about finding the people that value your work.
Yeah. So where would you say that most of your clients are coming from? How are they finding you?
Well, you know, it's a little different for me right now because I just moved a month ago.
Well, and actually, and that may or may not be relevant, the whole transitioning to a new place, which I know you're very much still in the process of. So maybe you can talk about what it was, and maybe a little bit about where you are. I don't know exactly where you are in that process.
Yeah. So my husband, you know, we're very involved in our church. So one of the ways that people knew of me. Now, the thing is, my church was a mega church. So we're talking 10,000-15,000 people, which everybody would think, oh, wow, you'd have so many people to draw from. But when you're a church of that size, it's very easy to get lost in there. So actually, a smaller church is better. But I was just really involved in the Bible studies, really involved in the women's ministry. So people knew what I did. I didn't just throw it in their face and, you know, pressure anybody. But everybody I know, I make sure that they know I'm a photographer, you know? So if they need a photographer, that's who the first person that's going to pop up in their mind is going to be me. And social media, I always tell people, your clients are not your friends, and they're not necessarily on social media. Like, that can't be your only marketing. Like, they're probably on social media, but that can't be your number one marketing tool. But what social media is good for is a reminder. It reminds them that you do this, you know? So my church was a big thing. The other thing was my kids started a new charter school, and I offered to do pictures for them. And so then it just became this thing that I was the known photographer there. And so a lot of people came from private schools that went to that charter school. And so that's a big way, is I got really involved with the school. So another version of this would be, you know, getting involved with PTA. But really, it's just going in, being involved, being known. And as you become known, people know what you do. And then my biggest thing was the referrals. You know, if somebody came to me, we're from a military town, so that was also a problem, because I'd have these clients who were so faithful for 3 years or 5 years, and then they'd leave. But I was constantly referred by people, so that was really great. And then the other way that I would say, and this is actually still happening now, is I got more serious. I haven't been blogging as much, but when I got more serious about my blog and learning SEO, that is how I get a ton of my clients now. In fact, I just had my friend who does, who makes changes on websites. I had her put on, are you from Texas or are you from Colorado? Because I'm still getting a ton of inquiries, and I'm like, okay, are these people from Texas or Colorado? So now I have to re-optimize my entire blog, because I'm seeing, you know, so many of my new clients came from SEO and came from a Google search, really. So that's another thing. The other thing that I would say for people, and this is something that I may try once I'm ready, is I've had major success with Facebook ads with the Snap Society. And so I haven't really tried it for my photography business, because I had no need to try it in San Antonio. I was so well established there. But in Denver, I may try doing Facebook ads. So that's another thing that if you really learn how to target well, you could put your marketing money in there.
Okay, so first of all, I really like that, you know, so many people do use social media, and search, of course, is really important. But I think you're probably the first one to just be so involved in your community and known in your community. And, you know, that's a lot of where it comes from. So I like that fresh perspective on things. All right. Mm-hmm. And I know I always say we can get into everything in so many ways, but I really want to get on to a little bit about the Snap Society. So tell everybody, what is the Snap Society, and what kind of, I know we've talked a little bit about what led you to start it, but just, you know, give us a little bit of a rundown on that.
Yeah. So I started the Snap Society a year and a half ago, and it's really evolved a ton from there. It started from me doing everything to now we have two assistants, and I have Anna Bartel, who really runs the Snap Society with me. And what it is it's a resource for photographers. So we do a ton of free stuff. You know, I've got web show Wednesdays. Anna's doing website critiques. She's doing some web shows. We're going to start doing coffee talks with each other. But we've created courses. So I have, you know, Edit in a Snap, where I teach you how to edit in an hour. Because when I first started out, it took me 4 to 6 hours to edit. And so now I'm down to an hour. So I created that. And then we have Pro Photography, which just teaches photographers how to profit. So we have a couple of paid things, but we have things that come out every single week that are free. And the great thing about it is I really went back to my beginnings. And like one thing I always thought as I started out, wow, that's such an amazing photographer. They're so amazing. I'll never be that amazing. And so that's why we started the column, How Far I've Come, because we see pictures from these amazing photographers and where they're at now. But then they also send us a picture of where they started and how awful it was. And I always tell them, if you send me a picture that's good, I'm not going to feature you, because I want to see pictures that really are raw from your beginnings, you know? And then we have all these questions, and they tell us, you know, how far they've come and how they got to the place that they're at right now, so that it can encourage those newbies. So this, for the Snap Society, I feel like the Snap Society is really unique in that it's a place for newer photographers to come and to gain knowledge, but it's also a place for photographers who are more established to come and give, you know, and come and give that inspiration. And then also the trainings that we offer are offered for all different levels. So yeah, that's the Snap Society. And we also have a community. So if you go to thesnapsociety.com, we've got a freebie every month, and we've got a free community online. So you can sign up to be a part of that, just because for me, for the first couple of years, I felt so alone in my photography journey, and I just did not know where to turn. And so we started the Inspiration Cafe, and that is our photography community that's online.
Right. And, you know, looking at the community, I don't care how good you are as a photographer, or how established you are, you can still learn from others, no matter what.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Tell listeners where they can find you, both the Snap Society and your photography website.
Yeah, so the Snap Society is thesnapsociety.com. You can find us on Instagram, on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope. We just started doing Periscope, which is so awesome. It's live, and it's an app for your phone. So you can find me there at Snap with Jamie. And Anna Bartel is on there, too. It's at Anna Bartel. And then my photography is jamielarsonphotography.com. Really creative right there. And then Instagram, I'm Jamie_Larson_photography. And that, I would love for you to go to my Instagram because it's very sad right now. I just kind of started up Instagram for my Snap Society is great. My photography is just getting going on Instagram. So, you know, you got to manage what you can manage when you can manage it, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, Jamie Larson Photography and the Snap Society.
Perfect. All right, I'll put the links in the show notes too. And I will be checking out your Instagram and all of your stuff. So Jamie, thanks again for chatting with me today. It was just fun to hear your perspective on everything.
Oh, thank you so much. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
If you liked this interview, I would love for you to share it with your friends, your fellow photographers, and also to leave a review in iTunes so that other people can find it. Next week on the podcast, I have Angeliki Jackson, who has an Instagram following of over 130,000 followers. And for Angeliki, it's led to all kinds of awesome opportunities, from galleries in Times Square to trips around the world. So Angeliki is going to talk a little bit about how she gained that following and what's come out of it, and advice for the rest of us. So come tune in next week.